This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And on the line with us is Jeff Charlotte. He's the author of numerous books, including The Family, The Secret Fundamentalism at the Heart of American Power, and C Street, The Fundamentalist Threat to American Democracy. He's also an associate professor of English at Dartmouth College. His website, jeffcharlotte.blogspot.com. You can tweet him at Jeff Charlotte, S-H-A-R-L-E-T. And Jeff, welcome back to the program.
Hi, Tom. Good to be with you.
It's been a while since we've talked. You're also a contributing editor at Harper's and Rolling Stone, I should add, the author of six books. Jeff, this piece in I believe it was the New York Times, What Was Maria Butina Doing at the National Prayer Breakfast, quoted you in yesterday's paper. And it was, it raised a whole bunch of questions for me and a whole bunch of flags that I wanted to get your thoughts on. If you could recap for people who, you know, may not have been with the program so long that they remember our previous conversations or may not be familiar with your work, who is the family, or what is the family? Where did it come from? What is its purpose? And then I'd like to get into why is this particular Russian agent of influence, shall we say, she hasn't been charged with espionage, trying to infiltrate it or play in that sandbox, Jeff?
The family is the oldest and arguably the most influential Christian conservative organization in Washington. It goes all the way back to 1935 when it was founded as an explicitly anti-democratic and especially anti-labor coalition. It was an anti-New Deal. That was what they understood their mission to be for the first 30 years or so. And more recent times, they're dedicated toward building a sort of an international network of elites. They believe that they serve God not by serving the poor, but by serving those whom they call the up and out, elites in power who are in a position to bring about this sort of kingdom of God they want. And their only public event, they're very secretive, they're kind of dedicated very explicitly. The longtime leader says the more invisible you can make your organization, the more influence it'll have. But they do one public event, and that's the National Prayer Breakfast, held every year in Washington on the first Thursday in February, which the U.S. President always attends, as well as other heads of state and congressmen and Supreme Court justices. And it seems like a pretty blandly ecumenical event, but what they consider it as is a recruiting device with which they draw those with whom they want to have ongoing relationships into deeper conversation, which is exactly how Maria Butina used it. She didn't infiltrate the prayer breakfast. She used the prayer breakfast the way it was meant to be used.
Wow. So, tie this to the house on C Street and tell people about that. And is the principal agenda of the family still to the destruction of the New Deal, ending Social Security, ending Medicare, ending minimum wage, ending labor protections, ending the right to unionize?
The second part is a really great question, because of course the New Deal is long gone in so many ways. But yes, I think it's fair to say that their vision of the kingdom of God is one of a kind of laissez-faire economics.
A libertarian kingdom.
It's sort of libertarian, except libertarian for the rich and not for the poor. They believe if you're rich because God made you rich. God chose you to be rich.
Oh, so this is Calvinistic.
It's very Calvinistic, and that plays right into the house on C Street. They maintain a number of properties, a big mansion called the Cedars in Arlington, Virginia, where they host political dignitaries. They have similar real estate in Moscow, in fact, where they also host a national prayer breakfast. And on C Street, a house where they provide sort of subsidized housing for a group of congressmen who are in close covenant with them. And listeners may remember some years ago, back in 2009, a number of political figures, Mark Sanford, John Ensign, a congressman, all got caught up in sex scandals. And it was all through the C Street house. The family went to bat for them, helping to cover up the scandals because it believed these men were chosen by God. That's how they work, and you can see how appealing that is to someone who wants to do sort of backdoor work in American power. Here's an organization that specializes in working behind the scenes.
remarkable. So what, beyond subsidizing housing for Republican congressmen, which seems, you know, is like kind of the visible thing, and putting on this, you know, once a year, you know, let's all talk about how you know, nobly religious we are, prayer breakfast thing. Is the family involved in specific policy issues?
No. That's one of the things that distinguishes them. As an organization, and in fact in their documents they say, we as a group don't take action. Rather, action arises out of the groups that we organize. They organize the men and few women with whom they work into what they call prayer cells. And you'll have a sort of a weekly or bi-weekly meeting that's sort of a Bible study, but it's also a way for you to collaborate. So you might collaborate on a business deal, and that's happened a lot at the National Prayer Breakfast. All kinds of lobbying gets done there. You might work as Vice President Mike Pence did to help move some legislation beneficial to American missionaries in Sri Lanka and sort of trading access to American arms for that legislation. Or you might, like Maria Butina, seek to improve relations between Vladimir Putin and Donald Trump, not just through her attendance at the National Prayer Breakfast, but when we look at the affidavit, and she's quite clear about the ongoing relationship, and a relationship that I should say stretches backwards and is on both continents. It's not just that she came to the National Prayer Breakfast, it's that lead organizers of the family went to her in Moscow, meeting with her and her boss, her handler, Alexander Torshin, because they, frankly, saw this as a good way of making deals.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I would think that most people, regardless of their party affiliation, would agree with Donald Trump when he says that our having a non-hostile relationship with Russia would be a good thing. But then, you know, the devil's always in the details with these kinds of things. How is, you know, I did not realize, or maybe I forgot, that the family has a branch in Moscow. How did that come about? And you know, are they trying to influence Russian foreign policy? I mean, you know, what?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. In 1992, Doug Burleigh, who is now the leader of the family, he's been the leader for just a year since the long time previous leader died after 40 years of sort of running the thing. Doug Burleigh is a sort of an old Russia hand. He's a longtime evangelical leader. 1992, he founded the Moscow Prayer Breakfast, which is where allegedly where Maria Butina started making contact with actually NRA officials. And he also founded numerous other small organizations, prayer cells, one of which he brags is about 25 years ago he founded a group for young men, young promising men, and he said these guys are now some of Russia's leading business leaders. That's how they seek to do that influence, is to build these relationships from the ground up. And, you know, to return to a point, Tom, you said, you know, we'd all agree that a non-hostile relationship is better. Sure, but I guess I think the really deeply troubling thing about how the family works, and this is how they always work, is they seek those relationships not through any democratic means, but, as they put it in their own language, beyond the din of the vox populi. This is this pretentious little bit of Latin.
Vox populi is Latin for voice of the people.
Right. They say beyond the voice of the people. That's where they think decisions should be made. And they really revere an idea of a strong man. Their understanding of Jesus is deeply unorthodox, even for the Christian right. They compare Jesus to, say, you want to understand Jesus? Look at other strong leaders in history. Hitler, Lenin, Mao. That's them speaking. I'm not saying they're secret Nazis, or certainly not secret communists. Wow. They admire strength. And that gives us a clue into their understanding of how you make peace between countries like United States and Russia. It's not through democratic open conversation. It's through serving the sort of the authoritarian impulses of men like Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin.
Does the family take public positions on things? You said that they don't do policy; they just bring people together. But I mean, even something as bland, presumably, as yes, it would be a great idea if the two, you know, largest nuclear powers of the world had a good relationship. Do they even go that far?
No, they take no public positions at all. And in fact, until 2010, in response to my reporting, they denied that they existed.
Really?
Despite the existence of 600 boxes of documents at the Billy Graham Center archives. Billy Graham Center, this is no lefty center of lefty conspiracy mongering. The documents were all there. The tax documents were all there. And if you ask them, they would say they didn't exist. In 2010, in response to my reporting on another one of their international involvements in the country of Uganda, where they had helped create something called the Kill the Gays Bill.
Yeah, you and I talked about that at the time.
Yeah, we talked about that time. They finally came forward and they said, yes, on national TV, they said, we've been very secretive. Charlotte's right about that. We've been maybe too secretive. We're going to start a website. We're going to go public. They started a website. I don't think it's been updated since then. It doesn't tell you anything. And that is the last of their public visibility. Even now, we have Doug Burleigh, who, you know, is either one of the unnamed organizers in the affidavit, or certainly as the lead organizer of the National Prayer Breakfast, knows more about it. It would seem like the right time for him to be speaking publicly about what he knows.
You're talking about Maria Butina and the Russians.
Yeah, I'm sorry, the Maria Butina.
Affidavit, yeah.
Exactly, that affidavit. They know something. Come forward. Show your commitment to transparent dialogue. If you believe in peace between these two nations, help it happen by putting it out in the open instead of this behind-the-scenes cloak-and-dagger kind of work.
Yeah, it's remarkable stuff. Jeff Charlotte, he's a journalist, contributing editor to Harper's and Rolling Stone. The author of 6 books, including The Family, The Secret Fundamentalism at the Heart of American Power, and C Street, The Fundamentalist Threat to American Democracy. He's also associate professor of English at Dartmouth College. JeffCharlotte.blogspot.com is his website. You can tweet him at Jeff Charlotte, Charlett. Jeff, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks, Tom. Always good talking to you.
Great talking with you, too. We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We'll be back with more of the news of the day and your calls right after this. And welcome back. Bill in Ashland, Oregon, watching on Free Speech TV. Hey, Bill, what's on your mind today?
Good afternoon, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
My brother pointed out that if you change the stress accent on certain words, it makes a big difference. When you say communism, if you change it to communism, it has a different effect upon people.
Sure.
It gives them the idea that it actually is a communal effort. It's a slight thing, Tom, but it has... I know you're very sensitive to language.
Yeah. No, it's a good point.
Another good example of a different thing would be continue to use the word meddling. Meddling, as somebody said in the New York Times, it sounds like a couple of old aunts,
yeah,
you know, disputing over whether their
yeah
nephew should be...
Meddling is what your mother-in-law does. I mean, in quotes. I mean, my mother-in-law actually doesn't meddle. she's sweet, but... But I mean, that's meddling is like in a family. This was not meddling.
No, this was a little bit more. It's not even needling. You know, it was like a machete to the whole effect, the whole affair. Anyway, Tom, thank you very much. Enjoy your program immensely.
Okay, thanks a lot, Bill. It's good to hear from you. I appreciate the call. Joan in Colonial Heights, Virginia. Hey, Joan, what's on your mind today?
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
It's just about Donald Trump. He's gotten this our whole system in an uproar. Everyone is worried, scared. Kids don't have to know if they're going to have a future or not. And people need to stop being scared of this man and run his immigrant history, because he's an immigrant. Why doesn't he look at his background? His picture of his mother is terrible. His grandmother, her middle name is Christ. And she died July 6, 1966. So 3-6 is in her death date. So that's automatic. He's a demon. But the people that are supporting him now, they're suffering. Why don't they just get him out of there? Just run him out of town. Run him out on the rails. Who cares?
Well, you know, whether he's a demon or not, you know, Joan, I'm not going to go down that road with you. But the people who are following Donald Trump are the people who watch Fox News, basically. They, you know, which is programmed by one of Trump's fellow billionaire autocrats, oligarchs.
Mm-hmm.
So here we've got an oligarch in the White House, and we got an oligarch running a major television network, and the major television network is supporting. You know, the billionaire in there is supporting the billionaire in the White House. No surprise. And mm-hmm. and together they are collaborating to basically, you know, keep people fooled, to cause average working people to think that if you get rid of the unions, somehow your wages are going to go up, when actually all history tells us it's the exact opposite. To get average working people to think if you give a tax cut to the billionaires that you're going to have more money at the end of the day, which, you know, it's the opposite. And we're seeing that right now. Wages are down 2% this year.
Yes.
So,
you know, I was looking. I'm sorry to cut you off, but I know we don't have much time. But I was looking in the Federal Civil Rules book. There's a way to get him impeached because, see, people don't know. He's not a real legitimate president. I don't address him as a president. I just say Donald Trump because he has no legal schooling. He has no legal experience. He's nothing. He just buys hotels, hires people, and oh well. So the thing is, it says to get him impeached is for him to get convicted of a crime.
Right. Well, actually, the way it works, Joan, is the conviction happens in the Senate, and the Senate has to convict him of high crimes and misdemeanors after the House has charged him, which is what's called impeachment. But you're spot on, Joan. Thank you very much for the call. We'll be right back. Ron in Central Michigan. Hey, Ron, what's on your mind?
Tom, you know, you brought up Roger Cohen's editorial, worst case scenario.
Right, yesterday. We're in the last paragraph. For people who don't know what we're talking about because they didn't happen to listen to that segment, Roger Cohen in the New York Times yesterday said that basically the worst case scenario that Norm Ornstein was projecting was that Trump would, at some point, if he or his family members are charged or indicted or even just seriously exposed, that he would activate his followers and they would go out into the streets and there would be bloodshed and then Trump would declare martial law and put in jail all the Democrats, basically. Yes, back to you, Ron.
Yes, you know, there's actual historical precedents for that between Russia and the United States. We go back to 1908 and the program in Russia in which Jews were attacked, slaughtered, raped, and murdered. And
this was before the Russian Revolution?
Pre-Russian Revolution, 1908.
Huh. And, I didn't know that happened when the Tsars were in charge.
So, under investigation, this was sanctioned by the imperialist government. And what they did, they got out-of-town thugs to come in and carry out the program. In our own country in 1908, we had a program in Springfield, Illinois, in which the white Christians sacked the black community, same thing program. Okay, and it was the same type of people, okay? Right. And what we have today, in today's government, we have an imperial Russia that is touting that same message, and we have in our country a fascist government forming solidly. And the goal that you said, those Trump thugs, whatever you want to call them, NRA gunmen, the deplorables, they are the ones that would carry out the same things. So the precedent is there. The movement is there. The people are there. We must be vigilant. We must be prepared to defend ourselves in any circumstance, whether politically or physically, Tom. The message must go out. I refer you to the program in Kiev, Knessa, in 1908.
I'll have to check it out, Ron. But there are plenty of historical precedents, as you accurately point out. And thanks for the call, Ron. The, you know, both in the United States and elsewhere, and this is why we have to be very careful. This is a very, very dangerous time. And, you know, when you've got figures on the right calling for people to be armed, when I get callers from the left calling for people to be armed, this is not how you make a republic, a democratic republic. It's not how you make it work. It's how you tear it apart. And I'm very concerned that we're being torn apart by these billionaire-funded propagandists who are trying to pit us against each other. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
More of your calls and the news of the day and my thoughts on all the above right after this. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 34 minutes past the hour. And Frank in Cold Row, Idaho. Hey, Frank, what's on your mind today?
I had a simple question. How are people not traitors to the American people when they support the invasion of America by the foreign invaders?
Are you... I don't know what you mean.
Well, what I'm saying is how anybody supports the invaders of America...
The invaders being...
Are you
talking
people.
About Putin or are you talking about Mexicans?
I'm talking about Mexicans.
Okay. So can you name for me, Frank, any... I'm guessing you got this talking point from Fox News, and I'm telling you, they're lying
to you. No, I
didn't.
You. I just got up by seeing what's going on.
Great. Can you name for me, Frank, stop for a second. Can you name for me one Democratic politician, because I want to just destroy this person's career, who is calling for open borders and unlimited immigration in the United States? Name one, please.
About Waters.
No, that's Maxine Waters is not taking that position.
Yeah, she's supporting the illegal invaders.
No, she's not. There is not a single Democratic politician or any politician of either party in this country who says that we shouldn't have borders. There are, however, libertarians. Rand Paul is close to that. That we should have. Rand Paul has taken the position in the past. I don't know if he still holds it. That there should not be immigration laws.
You're not answering my question.
What was your question, Frank?
My question was: anybody that supports the invasion of America, how are they not traitors to the American people?
I think they would be.
Oh,
what I'm saying is
support the Mexicans.
What I'm saying is that if you want to talk to somebody who thinks that we shouldn't have immigration laws, you need to be talking to libertarian Republicans, because that's
okay,
the position of the Libertarian Party.
Then anybody who supports the invasion of America by the Mexicans is a traitor, right?
I think that anybody who supports the invasion of anybody under any circumstances is at the very least not a patriotic American. Yeah, here's the problem, Frank, and this is the problem when you get your information from Fox News or from Donald Trump. They're lying about Democrats wanting open borders and all this kind of stuff. It's just a plain old flat out lie. B, they're lying about what even sanctuary cities are, and I'm guessing you don't know, and we can have that as a conversation if you'd like. And C, this is a problem that started in 1986. Prior to 1986, you had every year about 500,000 people would come from Mexico up into the United States, typically during the agricultural picking season. They would pick crops throughout the summer and fall, and then they would head back down to Mexico in the winter. It was an annual migration that went back and forth. A few people would stick here and there, but it was not that big a deal. And the reason why was because prior to 1986, if you were a wealthy white employer, and you hired people who were in this country without documentation, you went to jail. And the unions worked really, really hard to enforce those laws so that even non-unionized employers, the unions would find out, hey, this meatpacking plant down the street here is hiring illegals. They would make sure that the CEO went to jail. And Reagan, when Reagan did his amnesty in 86, he stopped enforcing the law against employers. And so now you've got a situation that's been going on since 1987 where meatpacking plants and construction crews are literally, and which used to be two of the most heavily unionized industries in the United States, 100% American workers, 100% unionized, meatpacking and construction. And I'm guessing, Frank, you're old enough to remember this. I certainly am. And what happened in 86 when Reagan said, I'm not going to enforce the laws against rich white employers anymore, is that those employers, right now, you can go down to Mexico and you can find broadsheet newspapers, like, you know, like your shopping guide kind of newspapers, in the cities along the borders, where you will find ads in Spanish for meatpacking plants in the upper Midwest. You will find ads in Spanish for construction sites in Las Vegas. They are bringing people into this country who are without documentation, and they love it. The Republicans and the Libertarians love it. This is why Donald Trump is importing workers from Mar-a-Lago. He just brought 80 people in from Europe to work in Mar-a-Lago because they will work at a lower wage.
Why do the Democrats refuse to help us deport them?
Democrats are entirely in favor of deporting people who are not here legally.
Are they? Well,
in fact, that was the hit on Obama, was that he was the deporter in chief. Obama deported more people than any president ever had in history because all of these people are coming because of Reagan's policies.
Why do we have sanctuary cities run by Democrats?
Okay, the reason for us, and that's a really good question, Frank, and I hope that we can understand each other on this. If you live in Cole Row, Idaho, right? If let's say that somebody was you're home at night and it's 11 o'clock at night, you've fallen asleep in front of the TV, and there's somebody who shouldn't be in your neighborhood who is breaking into the back door of your house. Okay, you with me so far?
Yeah.
Now you got a neighbor who isn't in this country legally. You got a neighbor who came in response to one of those help wanted ads that the rich Republicans put in the newspapers down in Mexico, who's working at the meatpacking plant down the street or 7-Eleven or whatever it may be, but that neighbor is not a legal citizen. That neighbor, if they think that if they have any interaction with the police, the local police, the police in Cold Row, Idaho, if that neighbor thinks that if they dial 911 to save Frank's ass, that they're going to go to prison or get deported, they're not going to dial 911.
They shouldn't even be here.
I agree with you, but they are. And so if they are here, don't you want them working with the police rather than fleeing the police?
I want them deported. I want them all deported.
Well, that's fine. If you want them all deported, the easiest way to do it, and Mitt Romney proposed this, by the way, that he was ridiculed for this, but you know it actually makes sense to me, is you start arresting these rich white employers. And they will stop running help wanted ads, and they will stop hiring people who are here without documentation. And what are people going to do when they can't get a job and they can't get welfare because they have no proof that they're a citizen? They're going to leave the country. And in fact, to some extent, in the last couple of years, that's been happening. We've actually had negative migration, with the exception of the people who are fleeing the wars in Nicaragua, Honduras, and El Salvador that Ronald Reagan started. Reagan started those wars.
Why are the Democrats supporting them?
Supporting who?
The illegals.
No. The way a sanctuary city works, Frank, is that if I'm a cop in Cold Row, Idaho, uh-huh. and somebody calls me up and says, you know, I just got raped, or my next door neighbor, my neighbor's house is being broken into right now. I'm watching it happen, and I go out there and I interview that person, and I notice that person has brown skin and speaks with a Spanish accent. Then I'm not, if it's a sanctuary city, I'm not going to call ICE.
Why?
I'm simply going to enforce the law. Because it's not the job of the police in Cold Row, Idaho, to enforce immigration
laws of this nation.
Federal officers enforce federal laws. City officers and state officers enforce city and state laws.
I got a question for you. What's going to happen when the American people rise up and run the trash out?
Oh man, Frank, are you calling for violence against people?
If it takes that to clean America of the illegals, yeah, they're invaders.
All you got to do, Frank, is put some of these rich white employers in jail. I'm telling you, that's all you got to do. Frank, I'm sorry I couldn't get through to you. I thought maybe I could. Lori in Exeter, New Hampshire. Hey, Lori, what's up?
Hi, Tom. So happy to hear from you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, first of all, I mean, that caller, I mean, God bless you for trying to get through to him, but he was, you know, a door. It was a locked door. No way you were getting through. But what I wanted to talk about is, you know, I am starting to get nervous. That man reflected an attitude that, unfortunately, a good amount of people share. And I live in New Hampshire. It's not uncommon for me to see people carrying holsters with guns. Not uncommon for me to see Trump signs. and everything is so divisive, and people are getting the, you know, the temperature's really going up. It's really gone up this week.
Yes.
So without being an alarmist or reactionary, really, what do you see? I know you don't have a crystal ball. You know a lot about history. I mean, what? Where do you think we're going? And, like, what should a person do to prepare themselves in this crisis?
Yeah. In 2014, I wrote a book about this scenario, Lori, and the publisher suggested that it be titled The Crash of 2016, tragically. which meant that by 2017, nobody was buying the book, but it's still in print.
Oh.
And it's and basically the premise of the book is that every time America has hit the reset button, and we've done it three times in history, we did it in the 1770s after the great crash of 1770. We did it in 1776 with the Declaration of Independence. We did it in the 1860s after the great crash of 1856, which led to a massive depression, which arguably led to the Civil War, and we rebooted after the Civil War. And we did it in the 1930s after the great Republic, what was referred to up until the end of World War II as the Republican Great Depression of 1929. We did it then. And what we, and by the way, each one of these events were roughly 80 years apart. And what we find is that Arnold Toynbee famously said, perhaps, I've never been able to verify the quote, but it's attributed to him, that when the last man dies who remembers the horrors of the last great war, the next great war becomes inevitable. And, you know, and it's much like, you know, the guys who lived, the men and women who lived through the last Great Depression would have laughed the Republicans off the floor of the Senate when they proposed doing away with the bill that separates investment banks from brokerage houses, and Glass-Steagall. But they were all dead, by that time, or completely out of power.
Right.
So about every 80 years, we make the exact same mistakes, and we end up with the exact same result, which is a Great Depression followed by a world war followed by a major reset. And I am predicting that's going to happen, and it's going to happen sometime in the next few years. In fact, I think, frankly, it's going to happen in the next 2 years, but in 2014, I thought it was going to happen in 2016. So my crystal ball is fuzzy, but I know it's going to happen. That reset process is what is how cultures and societies reset themselves. It's how we have. Let's hope it's not as bloody as the Civil War or as worldwide bloody as World War II, and that we can make it through with minimal damage. But there will be a reckoning for all these excesses, and hopefully something good will come out of it. I mean, historically it has. I don't think this is a time to panic or freak out. I think it's a time to get active, to get ready, to insert ourselves into Democratic Party politics, or if you're inclined, into Republican Party politics. We need good people in both political parties, and find local groups that are engaged in activism in ways that are friendly to you, and participate. So that's my suggestion, Lori. I got to run. Thanks for the call. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Back with more of your calls and the news of the day right after this. And welcome back. John in St. Louis, Missouri. Hey, John, what's on your mind? Thanks for watching Free Speech.
Oh, yeah, thanks, Tom, for your program. It's really great. My question is, I'm going to give a little history back, a little backstory to it. In March of 2015, 47 U.S. United States Republican senators violated the Logan Act, which was an act of treason. Yet none of them were ever held or a trial or anything.
Well, what was the specific first of all, refresh my memory as to what the Logan Act is.
The Logan Act is that no one can negotiate or without.
Oh, you can't do foreign policy, basically. Yeah, that's from the 1790s. I'm familiar with that. And so how did these guys, you're talking about by trying to blow up the Iran deal?
Yeah. When they did that, they all signed that document, that
right.
paper, and
yeah.
they violated Logan.
Yeah, I called him out about that at the time. You're right.
But I said, hey, man, these guys violated the Logan Act.
Yep.
They all committed treason. They should go to jail.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure that they committed treason, but they did break the law. And, yeah, that's what I was calling for at the time.
Yeah, but none of them went to jail. And
so where are you going with this?
Everybody kind of wanted to let it just pass and go by. Okay, fine. But they did commit treason because that was an act of treason. Okay, so fine. We kind of let that go by. Now we have a Republican president who publicly is told a week before he goes to Helsinki, my God, those dang Russians, they attacked the United States. You know, here's the document of proof. There's 12 guys there that did it. You know, we're telling you that, Mr. President. You know that going in there. What does he do? He knows that you have an enemy of the United States, and he stands there publicly and says, oh, no, this guy's the greatest guy in the world, man. I love this guy, and I don't believe anything that our intelligence community says. That's an act of treason where he puts the needs of this nation over that.
And 70% of Republican voters, the poll was just released a few hours ago, 70% of Republican voters think that what Trump did was just fine with Mr. Putin, with President Putin there. And so, you know, I would say that that's because of the existence of a billionaire's, you know, an oligarch billionaire's network, that's Rupert Murdoch and Fox so-called News, basically putting that message out. And most Republican voters, I think, are now getting almost all of their news, if not all of their news, from Fox News. And the consequence of that is what we're seeing.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. But my question is, it was an act of treason. I mean, outright act. I mean, you had the former head of the CIA under Obama. He even said it. You even had John McCain. My God, you know, I've seen some stuff that's pretty treasonous. Boy, this is real. Even he knew it was an act of treason.
Yep.
So what you have is you have a president who has committed treason. You had several Republicans that already do it in the past. So when has treason become acceptable in the United States? I mean, if that's what we're trying to
I think it became acceptable when America elected a black president. I think that the irrational racism that President Obama's election brought out in the Republican Party, or that the Republican Party chose to exploit in order to achieve political power, including Donald Trump's birtherism, I think that was the point at which questioning even the President of the United States' legitimacy, I think that's where it began, John. Welcome back. Derek in Roanoke, Virginia. Hey, Derek, what's on your mind?
Tom.
Derek?
Tom.
Derek?
Tom. Hello?
Yeah. What's on your mind, Derek? I'm here.
I'd like to ask you something. Have you ever asked a religious right person, these Christians, what does that heaven look like? You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, but I don't know why you would want me to do that.
I mean, because I don't talk to them. I don't know if you talk to people like that, but
yeah.
When they call up and they hate on everybody and Mexicans, I always, you know, I ask people, you know, who talk to people, I say, what does that heaven look like?
Oh, I think I understand where you're going with this, Derek. Are you suggesting that the guy who was anti-Mexican a little bit ago was that because he's a racist, and that when if he dies and goes to heaven, he's going to discover that there's as many people of color up there as there are people who look like him? Is that your point?
Right.
Okay,
right.
I got it.
I always wonder about them people, because is the heaven going to be all white?
Yeah, I think in their minds it probably is. It's probably a segregated place. I really do. Derek, I want to get a couple more calls in here before the end of the show. We're coming up on it. And Franklin in Savannah, Georgia. Hey, Franklin, what's up?
Hi, Tom. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you.
I have some comments about upcoming events, and I have some questions about, you can inform me about the appointment of Kavanaugh. to the Supreme Court. And I understand he will have a hearing for Congress in about 2 months or something like that.
Yep.
But it's in the future. And I want you to, before I forget, I want you to get the word out and stress to the Democrats in Congress about questioning him about one of his opinions. Maybe you can enlighten me on it. Maybe I heard it wrong. Judge Kavanaugh, I think, even publicly made an opinion that a sitting president shouldn't be investigated or shouldn't be bothered. He could have written an opinion. Yeah, I think he wrote over something like 300 opinions.
Mm-hmm.
So this one opinion that I'm thinking about has to do with the future going forward. The one that I think he expressed, and enlighten me on it, that a sitting president should not be bothered and should not be investigated. He doesn't have time.
Right. Kavanaugh not only has said that, but he has also said in public forums that he would have reversed the previous Supreme Court decision, Olson versus somebody or other, that affirmed the right of an independent counsel investigation. Yeah.
Okay. So,
I've been saying, and this is why, you know, 2 weeks before Kavanaugh was selected, or a week before he was selected anyway, on the air right here on this program, I was saying Donald Trump is going to pick Brett Kavanaugh because of all the candidates, he's the only one who said that the president can't be investigated. And he's going to put him on the Supreme Court because he knows that if he refuses a subpoena from Congress or if he refuses a subpoena from the Justice Department, then it's going to go to the Supreme Court.
Right, because he would be, exactly. And the Supreme Court, if he's appointed with a 9-4 decision, clearly it will probably come down and agree with Kavanaugh, his opinion that a president...
Yeah, I think the odds are fairly high because the other Republican appointees are all acting in a totally partisan way on the Supreme Court. Franklin, thank you for the call. Thanks for watching us on Free Speech TV. What a day, huh? And I'm sure there's more to come tomorrow. Don't forget, between now and tomorrow, you know there's lots of opportunities to share with your friends about the radio station you're listening to this program on, or the TV station you're watching it on, or the internet site, or you know whatever it may be, YouTube, Facebook, whatever, to spread the word about this show and other good progressive media out there, to support our stations and our sponsors, and to get yourself and your friends involved. This is no time to sit on the sidelines. Get out there, get active, tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit tomhartman.com.